I heard Devi, Nayaswami Devi, who, for those of you who don't know, is the spiritual director, co-spiritual director of Ananda Worldwide, tell the most simple little story in relation to this reading. It was so simple that it came back to me last night, and I looked it up in the talk where she had given it, and I thought, should I tell that story? But in its simplicity, it's perfect, actually. So the story is of two souls, souls who had lived very righteous, very dharmic lives. And they died at the same time, and they were ascending to heaven. And they noticed that they're ascending together, but at first they were ignoring each other. And then they both had the thought, you know, this could be a pretty long journey, so maybe we ought to make friends with each other. So they started talking to each other, and they developed a friendship. And throughout their ascension, they were sharing and sharing, found they felt they had a lot in common. And then at one point, they noticed a light, and they noticed that they were being drawn to that light together. Well, one of them turned to the other one and said, just making conversation again, what religion are you? And the soul said, well, I'm Christian. What religion are you? And the other soul said, I'm Muslim. And then they both thought, this is so sad. I really like this other soul. But now they can't get into the kingdom of heaven because they're worshiping the wrong God. And it was very troublesome to them. But the journey kept going. And soon, the closer they felt and the closer to the light they got, the more concerned they were. So they each had the same prayer, which was praying desperately, please let my friend here be able to come into the kingdom of heaven. He's a great soul, even though he's in the wrong religion. And then after a little while, their prayer changed. And the prayer was from each of them, if only one of us can get into the kingdom of heaven, let it be my friend. And then the journey comes closer to the light, and as they ascend into the light, only one soul goes, but the soul includes the two of them, because in that light, of course, their consciousness was conjoined. And they ascended together into the light. It's a simple story, but it really shines that light on the fact that it is only on this earthly plane, only through the eyes of ego and through delusion, do those differences exist. I love the reading that Stephen chose today because it was just so perfect about that. There are so many shadows in this world. There are so many different ways of viewing the world, of living in it, and of seeing it. And until we can transcend that, we cannot know the truth. We cannot realize, as long as we're ego-bound, that we're all one, which is right at the heart of this reading. There are, of course, many points to the reading, certainly the broadest of which is that we are all one and together in the light of God. But I also love how Jesus sort of gave us gradations of ego attachment, ego involvement, the pain that we can cause ourselves. So I don't have the reading right in front of me, and it doesn't matter, but one way we could injure ourselves, and then by the third one, if we dare tell somebody that they are not the Son of God, if we imply to them that message, that they're not a part of God. That I forget what the words are. Reet has the book under her desk. Could you just read that last? Or, no, that's the beginning. That starts, that's not the worst of it. I should have a copy up here. But he says, so the first one he says, if you call your brother a fool, you'll answer to this supreme, is angry with his brother, already stands condemned. Whoever contemptuously is an important word, calls his brother a fool, shall answer for it in the supreme council. So first you're in a little trouble, then you have to deal with God himself. And then the third one is, whoever calls his brother an outcast of God shall be in danger of hellfire. You know, those are powerful words, but clearly words from Jesus that show us, as I was saying, the degrees of trouble that we can get into as we get more and more forgetful. I had a profound experience of this recently, which I've shared with some of you, but I was pretty good during the pandemic. I stayed pretty calm and centered. And then a few months ago, I just hit a place where it was, you know, Barry and I were a little too together for too long. And I was starting to notice that I was noticing little fault here of his, not mine, another little fault, another little fault. And until I found myself in an argument with him, and maybe for a lot of people that wouldn't seem terrible, but and I know I've shared some of this, but I don't really argue with Barry. I made a commitment to it a long time ago, and the commitment was very much in tune with this reading, that every time I looked at Barry, that I would see God himself looking back at me, that it would be Divine Mother. And it was a beautiful way to live, and I mean over many years. But one day I found myself screaming at Barry, really screaming at him about everything he was doing wrong. And what I realized later, of course, at some point I apologized, and I didn't have to tell him how much I care about him. He knows that. But there were several things I realized by doing that. In other words, looking at the man, allowing myself to sink to the place where I would dare to imply to somebody that they were living their life incorrectly. And I wasn't nice about it either. And the first thing that came to me, of course, was the way Patanjali speaks about truthfulness. Honestly, it has nothing to do with whether the words we say are in fact true. That's like the letter of the law. Maybe there was some truth or could be truth to the things that we say to each other. But in the spirit of the law, when we say those things, we are imprinting in somebody's mind that sense of themselves. You're this, you're that, you're this, you're that. You're not this, you're not that. I see what's wrong with you. And it's just, I mean, Swamiji speaks about this so clearly in the Raja Yoga book on the niyamas, I think it is. I always get confused here. Is it a yama? It's a yama, truthfulness. Is when he says, you know, you just don't tell somebody the truth because it's fair. You have to, if you tell somebody what feels like the truth, they should feel uplifted at the end of it, not beaten down. But what really hit me, and it came to my mind, was the story of the Buddhist monk who, when he finally got back to the Dalai Lama in India, after being held prisoner and tortured and beaten in China. And he said to the Dalai Lama, He said, but I almost made a very grave mistake. I almost lost my spiritual footing. And the Dalai Lama said to him, what happened? And he said, I almost got angry. It's like, what? And that was when he was being tortured. I was not being tortured. You know, it's what it does to our own soul to do that to another being that is so far off. And it has nothing to do with that which is real. It is only the vastness of spirit that's real. It's not what we see in each other, what we see in ourselves. It's not the ways with human eyes that we see such limitation, that we have so much prejudice, that we can be so greedy. Those are not soul realities. And this reading is saying, and the chance that Rose or whoever chose them chose today, nothing on earth can hold me. Rest in love, live in God, rest in God, live in God. Sorry. These are what we want to be affirming, the truth, the absolute truth, not to be wallowing down here and to be held to the earth by these minor and simple delusions. This is the path. That's what that story showed. We're all starting the same place, the place of delusion, of Maya, of judgment, and the whole path is that which is taking us to that place where the souls ascend and the realization that we are all pure light, that we are together in the light, and that if we begin practicing that, literally practicing it, beginning to rid ourselves of the habit of seeing people as bound by these bodies, as bound by their personalities, of the ease which with we judge situations and people. I had this really extraordinary experience last weekend, and I mean it just like that, like extra beyond ordinary. I went down to Los Angeles to help lead a workshop. It was called Essentials on the Spiritual Path, a deeper dive. And I was leading with Narayan, who's one of the spiritual directors down there. And we were out in Temecula, the new piece of property that Ananda LA purchased, I don't know how long ago, but I know that this was the first retreat that they had held there. Excuse me. And there were a lot of people at the retreat. I was very surprised. And that land is now a couple of hundred acres at least, because a piece was purchased and then more was purchased. And on the land sits many homes. But the one big main home of this, it's a farm. They're avocado and citrus farms. And this house is really big. We had 20 people sleeping in it, and then more camping around. And anyway, that's not what's important. What was important is that the minute I stepped onto the land, as we were driving up into the hills, I was feeling this. But when we arrived there and we got to the land, I felt like I was stepping onto land that Yogananda had handed to us, that he had been holding for us. It felt absolutely like this was ours. And by ours, I mean all of Ananda. It had the purest vibration. It was like instantaneously being drawn into the light. It was beyond all thought or reason. Well, that was beautiful for me. But what happened is that as each person arrived, I saw it happening for them. And there were many people who came, several at least, out of all of the people who came, who who knew nothing about Ananda. They had never been to an Ananda event before. But as each person arrived, I could just feel the expansiveness of the energy of the consciousness that was there, was just holding everybody. Everybody stepped into it and just knew the same truth. Now, the youngest people there were 11 and 12. They were sisters. And the oldest person there was in her early 80s. It was a very diverse group. I think 6 or 7 countries were represented. Never once did we have the feeling that there was any separation amongst us, that we were speaking different languages, that we came from different places. We were all picked up and dropped into 3 days of grace. But here's what I noticed that was fascinating to me. Throughout the course of the weekend, and this is not uncommon, because whenever you're leading a retreat, if it's going well, this happens. Most of the people in the retreat wanted to have a little bit of alone time with me. So at one point, I was speaking to the 12-year-old. Her name's Vanessa. She is, many of you know Frank. He's now Dharana, but it's Dharana's daughter. And she's up here for a year from Mexico. And so we were talking about her mom, and suddenly just these huge teardrops just start coming down her face. It just grabbed my heart. I said to her, honey, are you missing your mom? She said, I am. I said, do you want to come into my room and talk to me for a while? And she said, I do. And we went into the room and we spoke for a half hour about some of the most intimate things for a 12-year-old with total ease. Sometimes I couldn't believe the question came out of my mouth, but she answered it. Honestly, we were talking about her father was mad at her because she had left school for an hour and a half with 2 boys and gone to the park. And we were trying to figure out why her father might be angry with her. But she knew. She said, well, I was with 2 boys, Shanti. I said, ah. She said, I think Dad worries about me because I'm so pretty. It's very sweet, but also very deep. I asked her if she understood the potential dangers of being alone with 2 boys. She said, I know. I have an older sister. I mean, it was remarkable. At the end of that half hour, she looks at me and she says to me, this is amazing. I said, what's amazing? She said, I'm speaking to you like you're my best friend, and I've only known you for 30 minutes. That's what she said. She said, maybe you're really my grandmother. It was so dear. And then I take off with another woman who's grieving a loss that happened 23 years ago. And then this 84-year-old woman comes to me, said to me, I've known you all my life. You're my sister. In that experience, whatever that was, it went on and on. But to have those moments where you are living in the true realization that we are all one, that nothing separates us, that when we are living in that place of divine love, no judgment, no expectation, no need, pure acceptance, that energy just flows. And by the end of 3 days, really, I could spend an hour telling stories of the one-on-ones that were so beautiful, so unexpected, because they were happening in this state of consciousness where nothing does separate us, where that whether the 12-year-old was crying about her mother or the 40-something was crying about a stillborn 23 years ago, where the 84-year-old was talking about end of life. It didn't matter. Those are all of the variety of delusion that we have, of karma, of what holds us. And really, it doesn't matter what it is. Our job is that we have to transcend it. We have to live in the spirit of the law, not in the letter of it. This past Thursday night, I came to Raja Yoga, and I went into the Hatha Yoga part of it. Vivica Devi was teaching, and I've said this to all of you before, but I just can't say it enough. She was just born to do that. She has a beautiful way of integrating the truth of yoga in with the postures and in with the flow. And the classes are extraordinarily uplifting. Now, I, for years, have not been able to do much Hatha yoga because in this perfectly healthy being, my joints seem to want to go one by one by one. So it's either my back or a knee or this or that. But I often go in and just sit in the class. And when I was in there Thursday night, I realized that why I love being there, sitting in the back of the room, not actually doing the postures, is because Swamiji, in his extraordinary wisdom, brought the spirit of the law into Ananda Yoga with these beautiful affirmations. And when you're teaching Ananda Yoga, you don't do a pose without the affirmation. So he brings consciousness to the act. Now, we all know we could go do Hatha Yoga many places. We could be cold in it. We could be hot in it. We could be exercising in it. Many ways to do Hatha Yoga these days. Not like this. Not where you can sit in the room and not actually do the pose, but be in the pose. I feel so uplifted when I leave, even though I've been sitting still. It's the spirit that matters. It's the spirit that Swamiji brought to everything, that Master brought, saying, the issue isn't what mattered. That little girl was missing her mother. But I just held her in love. And even she said, how amazing is this? A 12-year-old said that to me, that a 40-something could let go of a pain that she's held onto, kept her heart closed around it for 22 years. It wasn't me. It's the spirit of the law. It's living in that uplifted place where suddenly you can't even relate to the pain that we experience in life. Now, of course, we all know it's not easy to get there. It's not easy, I mentioned before, starting to break our habits. How do we do that? How do we let go of our attachments? How do we find willpower, willingness, which, by the way, the title of this talk is Deeds versus Intentions. Now, that willpower, is that our intention? All of our intentions are good. All of them. That's why we could say nobody in this room is going to commit a murder. Swamiji was talking about nonviolence. He was saying, don't be violent with that plant. Can't you see it feels? Nobody's going in this room probably is going to go out, punch somebody or kill somebody or consciously ram their car or do that. But how many times do we bring harm to people just like I did with Barry? Just like that. Not wanting to hurt somebody, not setting out to do it. How do we relearn these patterns of behavior? How do we get out of grooves that have been laid down for lifetimes right in the core of our being? It's simply not easy. Master said, basically, he said, nip it in the bud. But he said, if you find yourself, this is Yogananda's words, not mine. If you find yourself thinking a wrong thought about somebody or saying a nasty thing about them, immediately start saying something about yourself that you see as wrong. Now, none of us would probably recommend that, but he's saying to us, break the habit of looking out and seeing anything wrong. And we all do it. Of course we all do it. There was a woman at the village. She said every time she would suddenly catch herself speaking words that were critical of somebody, she would always end the sentence with, just like me. And, you know, in a way, it's brilliant. It's just saying, we are all limited. That is not what we want to see. We have to break the habits. We have to find that willpower. We have to use the techniques that Master brought. We talk about it all the time. But I was thinking about it this morning. You know, we always laugh when we have this image of Yogananda running out onto stage with his orange robes and his long hair flowing behind him. Right? It was perfect. Right? Thank you. And he says, how is everyone? Every time he came out, right? In the Hollywood church. And everyone answered, awake and ready. And then he would say, how feels everyone? Awake and ready. Now, what do we think he was doing? Was he just branding himself so that 100 years later we would say, oh yeah, remember what Master did? No, he really wanted to get everyone's energy up and awake, because we had to add that energy to our intentions to begin to live our life differently. Sai Ganesh mentioned this morning in his introduction to the fire ceremony, I am awake and ready. When I teach that, I always say to people, I know this looks stupid. I am awake. And it gets more and more stupid. You're there. You're knocking on your head. I mean, these are super conscious living exercises, super conscious, brought to us by Yogananda. He wasn't being silly. No, he was saying, if you want to get to that place where you can live super consciously, where you can live in the light, where your heart can always be open, and you can be sharing love, where it doesn't just need to be a weekend. When I was meditating this morning, the first thing I did, transported myself right back to Temecula. That was just a gift of utter perfection. That's how we want all of life to be. So we need to do these practices. We need to find the energy. For goodness sake, an avatar brought them to us. We want to work each day to listen for Om, to do Hong Sa, to find peace. He couldn't have made it any easier for ourselves, for us. He just couldn't have made it easier. And last, and let me just close with this, because of course there's as many ways to get out of Maya as there were to get into it, so we could be here a long time. But maybe last and most important, remember all the time you have God and Guru with you. God wants us. We all have it, all have that all the time. They can do anything for us. They can transport us. I'll just share a story, how easy it is to forget. The next thing that's happening to me is that I have, everybody's telling me now, the orthopedist, I need to have a total knee replacement. And you know, but he and I both decided not right now. I walked out of his office and I start saying to people, I need a knee replacement. I need a knee replacement. I'll have in a year. I need a knee replacement. I'm going to try this other thing. But you know, I haven't seen it work all that much. And about 4 hours into it, I said to myself, what are you doing? Then I come here Thursday night. What's the class that I'm given to teach in Raja Yoga? Affirmations. That chapter on that, in that book, the first chapter on affirmations that Swamiji wrote is utterly, it's masterful. Of course it is, but it's masterful. Read it in as many ways as he can. He says to us, you can change anything in your life, any habit, any thought, any physical condition. He says it by changing your mind, by drawing energy in the direction that you want it to go, by actually making the connection through the chakras to the point between the eyebrows. We have to go for gold here. Gold is self-realization. But along the way, I said to myself, you are not having a knee replacement. Of course you're not. And these injections will work. Of course they will. Maybe I'm not yet in a place where I could make that happen, but they can, and we always have them. No, I'm not going to have a knee replacement. Absolutely. They are going to help me heal this knee, and they can. And I want all of you to hold that for me too. And if you catch me going like this, really, because these are the ways that we practice, the ways that we move from where we are to self-realization, from where we are to the gold, from where we are to seeing each and every soul, every moment through God's eyes. That's what we want, and it's ours for the asking or for the doing. So every day when we wake up and we say, I am awake and ready, we mean it. What are we ready for? We're ready for self-realization.
I have a love who's far away, far away, far away. I have a love who's far away, farther away than the stars. And yet she stole in my heart away, heart away, heart away. And yet she stole in my heart away, the farther away than the stars. Keep me not bound, no, teach me to fly far from earth's madness, free ere I die. Keep me not bound here, teach me to fly farther away than the stars. There's nothing here nearly so dear, nearly so dear, nearly so dear. There's nothing here nearly so dear as her laughter away in the stars.
Tara's brave, he'll so quiet. The day I came there, not a green leaf stirred on the air. Not a bird did proclaim ancient grandeur and fame, only ruins echoes, faint memories declare. I marveled to think, how can greatness e'er die? How can song disperse in the sky? How can hopes and dreams fade? How the warrior's sharp blade become dust? Was victory a lie? I stood there and pondered the great deeds of men's past, how like clouds in the sunset no glory can last. Even we, as we labor to achieve some bright end, must accept after glory that the night will descend. I've dreamed a broad rainbow over thicket and thorn, over crags that call tarry, your hopes are forlorn. All too oft in my dreaming, courage turned to despair, till I learned that success is but the courage to dare. As I gazed and thought sadly of Tara's demise, suddenly I saw her walls rise, saw her long regal halls, heard her people's brave calls, as though time had doffed a disguise. And I knew in that moment the deeds that men do never die. Each victory is true. Every effort we spend gives more strength in the end, till our gladness in life's ever new.